This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. Our radio show is heard on Pacifica stations nationwide, and our TV show can be viewed on Free Speech TV and on our website. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals on Thursday ruled against Donald Trump's executive order banning Muslims from seven nations from entering the U.S. Trump blasted the court on Twitter, screaming in all caps, "See you in court. The security of our nation is at stake." The decision will likely be appealed to the Supreme Court, but the four liberal judges there are likely to tie with the four conservative ones, which would result in the Ninth Circuit's decision as the final say. The details of Trump's Muslim ban specifically singled out Syrian refugees as being permanently barred from entering the U.S. It didn't matter that no Syrian refugee had ever attempted an attack in the U.S., or that Syrians today form the largest and most vulnerable population of refugees, one of the largest and most vulnerable population in the world. Vijay Prashad is my guest. He is the professor of international studies at Trinity College in Hartford, Connecticut, and the author of 18 books, including Arab Spring, Libyan Winter, The Poorer Nations, A Possible History of the Global South, and The Death of a Nation and the Future of the Arab Revolution. He's a weekly columnist for Alternet. Welcome to the program, Vijay.
Thanks a lot.
So first, let's talk about what the court's decision means. There's been one legal setback for Trump's Muslim ban after another. Does this, and for him to, of course, say "see you in court" also just implies the ignorance, his ignorance of how the judiciary works, how legal decisions happen in the U.S. Does this indicate to you such a widespread opposition in the U.S. that even the judiciary of the country is kind of shocked at what he's attempted?
Well, I wouldn't go that far. I mean, when he did put the executive order out, it is true that at major airports around the country, thousands of people gathered. They yelled, "Let them in." It was an extraordinarily powerful demonstration of the good side of American history. At the same time, polling data suggests that about the same percentage of the American population or the electorate which voted for Donald Trump, that's about 45%, support this executive order. So, you know, yes, there is, I think, a great sense of perhaps, you know, frustration with the way that the administration has functioned. There is perhaps anger, revulsion, you know, but this is shared by a section of the populace. This is a very divided country. I think there's a considerable number of people that are for some of these orders. I think the courts came at this from a different point of view. After all, this is the Ninth Circuit, as you well know, the most liberal of the circuits. They came very sharply at the merits of this order, you know, looking at, for instance, a simple fact, as you mentioned, that people from these seven countries have not had, you know, any kind of terroristic activity. I think we should not overestimate the power of parts of the population that I think have been saturated in racism, Islamophobia, you know, various kinds of hatreds, which they share with sections of Europe, where strikingly new polling data shows that people in Europe are quite enamored by the policies of Donald Trump.
So it's interesting. I guess it depends on which polls you look at. A poll, new poll, I think, is the one that you're referring to that showed these results of about half the country supporting Trump's ban. But one that was done a week ago by CNN ORC pointed that about 55% do not approve. And that number increased from last year when the same poll was done, where there are now more people in support of refugees as per this one polling firm compared to just a few months ago. I suppose it depends a little bit on how the questions are asked, but probably at least 40% supports his decisions.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as I said, it's about 45% that are rock solid behind him. Don't forget that in Iowa, when he was campaigning, he said that if he went onto Fifth Avenue and shot somebody, his supporters would still be behind him. I mean, this is a chilling kind of attitude that both he has and that his supporters have. The merits of the issue are irrelevant. But Sonali, let's be a little honest here. The United States is very poor at managing the income of refugees, meaning bringing refugees into the country. With the case of Syria, until recently, there were only about 200 or so Syrian refugees allowed into the country, despite this quite brutal war. And it's just in the last 18 months or so that those numbers were increased, principally because the United States was embarrassed by the fact that it had taken so few refugees when it was making so much noise about the war and at the same time arming one side in that war. So, the United States is not a world leader in, welcoming refugees into the country. It has indeed a very poor record. And this only deepens, I think, the kind of shameful record that has been there for a long while.
Right. And in fact, the hurdles that refugees have to go through in order to make it into the U.S., I mean, even the words extreme vetting seem to be a bit of a euphemism. They literally have to go through months, years of obstacles of, money spent, lawyers, paperwork, their background checks. And then after all of that, they might be let into the country. And so for those people who had gone through those hoops and gone through all of that trouble and who happened to be trying to enter the country when Trump's ban went into effect without warning, they were, I think, the least fortunate of those Syrian refugees attempting to enter the U.S. Tell us about the piece that you wrote in Alternet recently where you profiled the case of one particular Syrian refugee trying to enter the U.S.
Yeah, this is a very important case. This was the case of a young man. His name is Nael Ziyano, and he is a geologist, had worked the last several years, bizarrely, I mean, ironically, perhaps, with the International Migration Organization, which is a UN body in Gaziantep, which is in southern Turkey on the border of Syria. And Nael, had a situation where he should easily have flown right into the United States. His wife, last year in February of 2016, was given asylum. He has a two-year-old child, 18-month-old son, who lives with the wife in Long Beach, California. And Nael was basically on her asylum application. He had all his paperwork ready, and he had gone through, as you say, extreme vetting. You know, by the way, there are these euphemisms we use: extreme vetting, enhanced interrogation. I mean, enhanced interrogation we know is torture. And extreme vetting basically means we don't want you in here. And if you can prove to us that you are angel-like, then perhaps we'll consider it. I mean, he went through rigorous so-called, extreme vetting. And then finally, the Department of Homeland Security gave him a document which guaranteed entry into the United States. It said on the foil, on the sticker that was on his passport, that airlines don't bear any liability if they carry him in because he's basically guaranteed admission. And he had an envelope which was which was to be opened at the border where he's basically given the nearest thing to asylum. So here is a case of somebody with a golden ticket to come inside Willy Wonka's factory, and he was denied at the airport in Istanbul. Turkish Airlines wouldn't board him, then Lufthansa wouldn't board him. And it took, an army of people on behalf of this one person, Senator Kamala Harris's office. It took people from Elizabeth Warren's office. We were in touch with the Customs and Border Patrol. We were arguing with the Department of Homeland Security. And eventually, thanks to the Seattle court decision, he was allowed to board the flight, a Lufthansa flight, and he entered Boston. But, I just want you to recognize that, just because of one executive order that was extraordinarily poorly drafted, tens of thousands of people had their lives turned upside down. This was a callous policy. It leads me to believe that the administration is not merely incompetent, but it doesn't like people. It doesn't see that these policies actually impact on real human beings. And before you put a policy out there, you have to understand what is the harm that you're going to cause to real people. And that seems to have not been at all on the table of their discussions. And the case of Nayyal is important because he was a Syrian refugee with an asylum application who was allowed into the United States, which shows that there should be no bar to letting Syrian refugees come into the country.
Now, Vijay, the about 100,000 visas we now know were revoked by this as part of this ban. Syrians are one of many populations of people trying to make it into the U.S. impacted people who had student careers, technical careers, you know, and were fleeing violence. Do you think at this point that the United States is going to be able to have the kind of, you know, have its cake and eat it too after this moment? Because the U.S. has relied on foreign workers from time immemorial, right? And what the message that it is sending to the world is that try elsewhere. The U.S. doesn't want you. Even if the legal decision ends up standing, it seems like a lot of damage has been done just to the U.S.'s reputation.
Well, this is not something that you and I need to talk about. This is something that we can just overhear, you know, the amicus brief that came from Amazon and firms like that, because they are extraordinarily vulnerable to these kind of bans. You know, they rely greatly on workers who come from overseas, highly skilled technical people. I just want to say two things about that. One, it's already been the case since, in fact, Trump's election, that many of these firms have considered seriously moving operations outside the United States. So that's one thing to think about. But secondly, I think one should pay attention to the fact that last year, Stephen Bannon, who's a very close advisor to the president, on a radio show spoke very bitterly about the so-called H-1B visa people. That is the Asians, who, specifically Asians, who come through the H-1B visa program. These are highly skilled people, you know, who have guaranteed jobs in the United States. And what Bannon suggested was that the engineering schools in the United States, he said, Americans don't get seats in them because of these people from Asia. He said, these people from Asia, there are too many of them inside our companies. And then, you know, when he was pushed, why is this a bad thing? He said they don't have Jeffersonian democracy in their DNA. You know, this is a kind of classic racism that's there inside the White House, resentment of foreign workers, you know, revenge against these people. So I think it's important for the media to, you know, I think broadcast some of this stuff out there. People should know that if they are seriously going to stand in a queue, you know, whether it's in Beijing or it's in Mumbai, and they want to enter the United States to work, that the atmosphere now is such that the person very close to running the ship, it basically hits them. And I think we need to put that out there.
Yeah. Now, going back to how Syrians have been in particular singled out, this is a population of people that many have compared to Jewish refugees fleeing Nazi Germany, and how the U.S. very, you know, initially was reluctant to take in refugees, and then eventually had to be pushed into doing so. Syrians are among the most vulnerable population of refugees in the world. That's why so many of them have risked their lives to cross the Mediterranean to come to Europe. Recently, Amnesty UK had a stunning report about Said Naya prison and their reporting that they did with witnesses at the prison who claimed that dozens of people are being killed every night by hanging in this prison, that up to 13,000 people have been killed. Ordinary Syrians are being targeted from so many different sides. How important is it for us to acknowledge, when we talk about Syrian refugees in the U.S. here, what they are fleeing? They have very little to go back to.
Well, look, you know, the comparison with European Jews fleeing Nazism, I think, is useful but not complete. And the reason it's not complete is, unlike with the early years of World War II, in this case, the United States has been a party to this conflict. I mean, firstly, There was the conduct of the illegal war in Iraq in 2003, which destabilized the entire region, sent, you know, tens of thousands of Iraqis as refugees into Syria. And then during the Arab Spring, the United States joined with the Turks, the Saudis, the Qataris, and others, basically to run mayhem across North Africa and West Asia. You know, we're talking about Syria now. You know, millions of dollars flooding into Syria, millions of dollars of weapons entering into Syria to create chaos in that country. So the United States is not merely a bystander, which is turning the so-called ship of fools away from the U.S. coastline. You know, the United States has helped, has participated in creating this refugee crisis and then turns around and says, well, we don't need you here. You know, I mean, that's, to my mind, really the scandal. It's not like there are refugees being produced, you know, outside and it's too bad and we should take them in because we're good-meaning people. Here, there is direct culpability in the chaos created in the region. And the fact that the United States is turning around and saying, we don't want you here, is a much higher level of immorality than merely turning people away.
Finally, Vijay, one of the things that seems so frightening is Trump's threats in his reactions to the judicial decisions. When we have seen judges and courts affirm that this ban of his is unconstitutional, he has basically said, if something terrible were to happen in the U.S., it's going to be your fault. I mean, this is kind of a scary thing because, of course, attacks do happen in the U.S., and he set the stage for us to be able to, you know, have a post 9/11 like reaction the next time there is such an attack.
Well, there's no question that, you know, that's a very, I think, a dangerous thing for him to have said, but it's in line with a series of dangerous things. You know, he's staffed an administration which is, you know, scandalously. I don't know how to even put it. You know, I was going to say incompetent, then I realized that's not the right word. He has somebody in the education department who hates education. He has somebody in the justice department who has a history of injustice. I mean, how do you even understand this? So that statement he made that it's on your hands is in the context of this very broad, you know, disregard for American institutions, disregard for, I think, reason and rational debate and dissent. You know, it's, when he called Judge Robarts of, you know, from Seattle a so-called judge, don't forget that this phrase so-called is one of his favorite Twitter phrases. There are so-called protesters, there are so-called voters, there are now so-called judges. You know, if it's not him, then it's not to be taken seriously. He belittles everybody who dissents against him. In other words, he's basically belittling the foundation of American institutions and the Constitution. And
Jeffersonian, course, democracy, you know, may not be in his DNA, Vijay. Maybe we should start calling him a so-called president.
Well, some people have tried that. I'm afraid it's not going to work. I keep going back to that statement he made, even if I shoot somebody, my supporters will be behind me. I think that's a very chilling thought, and perhaps he's right.
Vijay, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll post a link to your article and alternate from our website later. Thanks so much.
Thanks a lot.
My guest is Vijay Prashad, a professor of international studies at Trinity College in Hartford, Connecticut. He is the author of 18 books and a weekly columnist for Alternet. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/ruwithsonali.